World Wellness Education is a grassroots effort to encourage and inspire people to live a healthier life today than they did yesterday. And we know through our own experiences that this happens one step at a time, often one challenge at a time. We realize that everyone's path is different, and that is why we are dedicated to helping provide you different real-life stories from ordinary people on their journey from sickness to health. We do this through our television and radio programs, conference calls, local meetings, and our outreach programs. We dedicate a lot of our resources to our kids outreach program, where we provide a fun presentation to elementary school students, boys and girls clubs, scout troops, and other organizations. We share with them reasons why they want to stay healthy, like having fun, doing good in school, and being able to perform well in sports. And we give them simple steps that they can take to remain healthy. Years ago, when the seatbelt law was implemented, the easiest way to get parents on board was through the kids. Through a video campaign targeted at kids, millions of Americans began using their seatbelts. The kids would come home and plead with their parents that they had to put their seatbelt on before they started the car. And we realize it is much easier for parents to make healthier food choices if their kids are on the same page. As I said earlier, we are a grassroots effort. World Wellness Education is a 501c3 nonprofit organization, and our programs are made possible through donations and volunteer efforts. No donation is too small. No amount of time given is considered too little. We need and appreciate all of your help. If you would like to contribute, please visit our website at worldwellnesseducation.org and let us know what area you would like to become involved in. It doesn't matter where in the world you are. That is a great thing about the Internet. It connects us all so that we can make a difference worldwide, one story at a time. Now it is time for me to introduce tonight's speaker, Frederick Delarue. Frederick is a world-renowned music composer, inspirational author, spiritual teacher, motivational speaker, and angel communicator. Frederick's music is directly inspired by the angels, and he has made many CDs that soothe the soul. In fact, tonight, as you were waiting for the conference call, you were listening to one of his CDs called Musical Rapture, and I'm sure you'll agree with me that it was absolutely beautiful. Welcome, Frederick. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you so much for having me. And thank you, everyone, for listening.
I'm so excited that you're sharing your story with us today. And as I mentioned earlier, that is World Wellness Education's mission, so that people can find hope and inspiration in their own lives. And you've had many experiences that have shaped your life with who you are today. Can you start with telling us about the near-death experience you had when you were a young boy?
Sure, that was quite of an experience. I was 12 years old, and it was a car accident with my family. And basically, you know, I went from the coma to the near-death experience. So the coma, I always like to talk about it because it's something that I know helps a lot of people, because there's a lot of misconception on how to behave faced with someone in the coma. Usually, I believe if you love somebody and that person in the coma not responding to your needs to come back to you in our reality, usually we demonstrate our frustration, our anger, our sadness, and we cry, and we may scream, or we talk loud and everything. Well, we have to. What in from my experience being in the coma, I knew that everything was translated. Every thought becomes a sound to my ears. So every word said calmly is as if you were right, talking right to my ear, so quite loud. So imagine when somebody's crying and demonstrating a lot of pain and suffering and asking that loved one to come back, it becomes to it for me, from my experience, it became totally unbearable. And I've learned that, I mean, so now I'm able to help many people when I talk about this, to say, please, when you have somebody in a coma, make sure before arriving next to that person to be strong. Cry at home, but don't cry in the close parameters of the clinic or the hospital where that person is, because it will affect that person. And what you want is to have that person have the free will to choose or have, you know, or to come back to you. And by demonstrating so much suffering, you're pushing that person away into the light, because it's all about perception. And during that near-death experience, after the coma, I went into the near-death experience when I went out of my body and I went through that tunnel, seeing angels, seeing beings of light, it was very intense of love. It was very overwhelming of love. It was so beautiful. So it was all about perception. For like we say, your perception is your reality. Well, for my family's perception, perspective, because they could see me, my head covered in quite some amount of blood and everything. So for the perception was kind of distracted by their visual, and so for them they thought I was, you know, they had probably even killed me, because at some point I heard that many times that people, even the nurses at the hospital, thought I was dead. And me, I was just, my perception at that time was I was in the light. I was so, it was so absolutely beautiful, so calm, so peaceful. And I was sad when I would hear my dad crying near me at the scene of the accident. I was so sad for him, because he couldn't perceive or see how I was feeling. I was actually, you know, he was trying to help me, but me from the coma and near death experience setting, I was really trying to help him. Say, cannot you see that I'm doing so beautiful? But of course, I understand when you live in the physical world on Earth and believing what you see with your eyes. It's very limited. And that's another thing I've learned from that near-death experience, is that what we see with our eyes is about 5% to maybe maximum 10% of what is, or 15% at the maximum of what is. But most of the time, it's 5%. So my life has been completely, you know, this near-death experience has allowed me to open up the greater gates to see what's going on in the other 95%? Because of course, if you only see your life or the events of your life through the 5% of what you can see with your physical eyes, then that means your life is going to be very difficult, very harsh, because you see nothing, basically. So it's very limited.
It's like walking through with blinders. But you bring up such great points that a lot of people wonder if people can hear when they are in a coma, and you will see people reading at their bedside, but not only can they can hear exceptionally well, and our thoughts are energy. So you were able to hear, translate that energy into words then, correct?
Correct. And I could hear absolutely everything that was said in, I don't know exactly the you know, in terms of yards, you know, in terms of meters from where I was laying on the ground. But you can hear everything so well, and you can turn every thought of every person around you is transcripted into words. So you know exactly what people think, what people, you know, so it's like everybody's talking, because everybody's thought, every thought is translated into words. So it's very busy. That's why it's very important when you're when you want to surround somebody in a coma, to be, for me at least, I'm talking about my experience. I don't know if all the people in the coma are, it's the same situation, but at least it happened for me. So if it happened for me, I'm sure it happens for others in the coma as well. We need an extreme amount of peace, because we are in between two worlds. We are in between the light that is so light and so beautiful and so loving, so unconditional loving. That's why it's so overwhelming, because it's so beautiful, so bright, so welcoming, so homey. And on the other side, if you demonstrate to that person that you want that person to come back to your reality, which is suffering, pain, anger, needy, to come back to me, of course that person may choose to go to the light, because that, you know, it's an easy choice. But if you demonstrate a lot of love, unconditional love, and you make the effort, the conscious effort to behave that way, then you give the chance to that person in the coma to act upon the highest of his or her interests, or at least to not distract the divine plan for that person. Otherwise, that person will just decide to go to the light. And so I think it's very, very important to understand that.
That is really important, because we as humans, we don't want pain and suffering. We go to at all costs to avoid pain and suffering. So why wouldn't we do that if we were given the choice of going to the love and light versus suffering? Now, you did. You came back. You chose to come back, even though there was a lot of pain and anguish on this side. And you healed?
Yeah, I healed so fast. My head was really, you know, physically traumatized. So it took me a few months and probably years to be, you know, so I couldn't, you know, I couldn't do any sports having to do with a ball, or, you know, because, you know, my head was very fragile for quite some time. But I was out of the hospital in 3 weeks. And I know, for instance, that somebody who saw the accident happen, who was emotionally traumatized, stayed in the hospital longer than I did, because she couldn't get out of the, she saw the accident, she saw me jump in the air and fall, all my gravity in the ground, and have the car of my parents pushing me around, and she got so traumatized from the visual that she could remember, you know, from what she saw with her physical eyes, then she stayed in the hospital longer, because emotionally she was very traumatized. And that just tells you that, you know, it's all about perception, because her perception was I was hurt, and she saw that, she witnessed that, and it was too much for her to handle, when in fact, I was just, for me, it was the most beautiful blessing that ever happened to me.
And you were okay. You were surrounded with love, and you were...
Yes, I was
love.
Very okay.
Wow.
I was praying for those people who were crying for me on the scene. I remember that very well. I couldn't say anything. I could hear everything. I couldn't respond. I couldn't move anything, any part of my body. So my body was like not dead, because I was still in the coma, but my body was like not reacting. But I could hear every single thing.
Wow. Well, and then, Frederick, when you were 30, you experienced another setback to your health. Can you tell us about that?
Well, that's the paralysis episode.
Yeah.
Well, I was, you know, let's say that the first near-death experience gave me a gift of music, that I, at about the age of 13, I knew that gift was powerful and would be important in my life. However, it was a bit too much to handle for a kid of 13 years old kid, especially with a surrounded with a family that do not believe in angels and do not believe in any type of spiritual thing. So it was, I couldn't even mention the case of the accident ever to my family. So I was really lonely in that sense, and it was very difficult for me to express anything about that. So I started to compose music when I was 19, because the power in the music freaked me out, because I could understand it, but not too well, and I had nobody, like no mentor, no spiritual leader or spiritual mentor that could guide me, assist me in this ability that I had received. So I wanted to refuse it. The best way I found was to refuse it and to deny it. And it was really difficult to every day wake up and refuse the gift, because every day I knew one day I would have to face it. Because I knew that, you know, you can always try to hide or run, but, you know, some sooner or later you just have to face it. So, but I just, you know, it was okay like that. So anyway, it took some time until the age of 30, where I was running, like I said, I was running away from my path for so long, and I would refuse my friends, who sometimes were my messengers, divine messengers. I would refuse everything that everybody said to me, because I really decided to refuse that gift. And it was, my life was so difficult because of it. So I was running away from my path. So like I said, the only thing that God found, or the divine found, to bring me on track was to stop me, to physically run away. And the best way to do that was to make me paralyzed. So yeah. I always almost
really,
thank those.
All of that.
So I'm always thanking those nurses and who did that, who were probably guided to do that medical error, so I get paralyzed during this. It was a very tiny surgery that was supposed to be just an hour in and out, and I end up being paralyzed for temporary paralyzed, of course. I was able to walk again for 8 months, but what I remember from that episode, the very important thing of that episode, is when I woke up and I realized I couldn't sit. I couldn't feel my legs. I couldn't feel my toes. I never had any type of anger. I right away knew it was God. It was heaven sent. I got it right away in that second. I got it was God sent. And right away, I did my forgiveness prayer by saying, I'm sorry for not knowing better and running away for so long. And I promise you promise myself too, from now on, to do my life mission, even if somebody has to push me in a wheelchair from now on. I totally accepted it without any type of anger. And at that very moment, from my solar plexus, I felt like there was like the breath of life. I don't know how to call it. Sometimes I call it the breath of God. I don't know how else to call it. It was so divine. I saw like some air coming out from my solar plexus. And it felt so good. And that's why I didn't think more of that. And I, after that, knowing that I was able to start to move my toes and stuff, I felt that it was probably because I totally surrendered and forgave myself to do that, that I was able to, that, you know, the pain and the suffering was not serving me anymore. So I had to walk again because I got it. And maybe if I didn't get it, today I would still be in a wheelchair until maybe I get it. I don't know. That's still a question mark, but that's my take on it.
Wow, so you were able to see things from a higher perspective and see
always,
kind
yeah.
of the other 95% that most of us can't see.
The near-death experience when I was 12, all my life I'm able to see most of the time things from a way higher perspective. And that's how I came to do what I do today. But it's just like... it's a gift, and it's a gift I'm trying to share with as many people as possible. That's why I'm so happy you to host me today for this interview, so I can reach out to more people. So if we can help one person from that, it's huge, because one person can then help another person, and that's one person at a time. That's how we can do it.
Exactly. That's why we're here. So now tell us, how did your music change from before your paralysis to afterwards? How did, once you accepted your true gift, did it change?
Well, once I accepted my true gift, I opened up to all the spiritual community, and that was in Paris, France, where I was living and working at the time. And so I opened up to different spiritual leaders and mediums and angel communicators and physical healers, etc. I followed a lot of workshops and, you know, to try to understand, you know, I wanted to learn. And then one day, that angel communicator that was guiding me assimilating my gift told me something that I will never forget. To say, because I did some workshop with her for 1 year, and then I wanted to sign again for the year after, and she said, "No, I cannot accept your money anymore, because you need to you know more than me." And you just need to go back to that place to know who you are and do your thing. You don't need anybody to. So she taught me so many things that were so powerful of trusting your inner voice and trusting your intuitions and that was remarkable to be in the path of somebody with such integrity and honesty.
Wow. Well, that's beautiful. Yeah, trusting yourself, and that's hard for the majority of us to do.
Well, it is hard because usually people in the society we live in, usually everybody, including television, usually on radios, like, you know, syndicated radio. I'm talking more about political radio shows or the news on the television and everything. You know, usually people are paid to tell you how to live, and magazines or how to look like, and otherwise, you know, to be part of the society. How to be normal, and, you know, that kind of thing, what is normal. And so usually people like to tell you, the society we live today like to tell, to be an advocate on telling you how to live. And there's no way to tell you how to live. Everybody is right. Everybody is right, because only we're all unique. And so only you can know what's good for you. Even
right.
If you ask me a question, I can guide you, but only you can know deep inside, or if you listen to your heart, what's right for you, because it's your life. And today we kind of normally try to instead of teaching us how to be ourselves, how to live our own life, the society finally found a way to control and to condition many of us, most of us. And that's why we live in such a chaotic time. Hopefully we wake up soon, because this conditionment, makes people live a life that is not theirs. They think it's theirs, but it's truly not. To go to a higher place and see them from above and see if the life they live is, if the life you live is your life, or is it the life that was conditioned upon you?
Well, and like you said, our perception is our reality, and it doesn't matter who's telling us, whether it's doctors or teachers or parents or children. We have to take it upon ourselves to find out what is right for us and live accordingly.
Right. So that's why it's very important to one person at a time, you can make a change, and you can make a better world, basically, by being an example and by sharing that example, because there's no recipe. In fact, the recipe is to really be ourselves, but in order to be and live your own life, well, sometimes it takes a while before somebody is able to do that.
Well, and Frederick, I know that later on you ended up having another car accident and had another visitor. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. It was when I arrived to California, and to the desert of Palm Springs, and the angels had told me to start a meditation, a musical meditation. And I told the angels, well, I never gave any meditations of my life, so I don't know how to do that. And they kind of laugh, like usually they laugh about me, how sometimes I react, worrying about things that I shouldn't even think of. And they say, but the thing is, you don't have to worry about not knowing how to do it, because you're not going to do it anyway. All we ask you is to be there and to bring your equipment, period. And so basically, to make a long story short, I found a place. It was a small church north of Palm Springs, and beautiful couple ministers opened their doors for me unconditionally. They knew exactly my work. I mean, they felt it, and they say, we don't give you any condition. There is no condition for you. You do whatever you're called to do. And they are the only one so far that I met that let me do my work in that way. So for me, they were very important to my life. And when I gave the meditations, I was talking and playing music at the same time. Most of the time, I don't remember what I was talking about. But what the angels say, do your meditation and you will see. And I said, but what will I see? And tell you will see. And then what I saw is like after the first meditation, there was a lot of people feeling better. So let's say there was a lot of healing, and even more than that, that took place. And it was really incredible. And I was always asking how these things happened, how the music, I knew music could help, but I didn't know how it was really at a cellular level, how it was working. So I was always asking, they would say, ask and you shall receive. You don't know how you're going to receive it, though. So in my case, when I had that car accident, the next day I said, I don't know why I had a car accident. I don't know what happened. And And in my room, I had the Christ come to me. And at the time, I was not that particularly close to the Christ in my life, so it really shocked me. Not that I was against the Christ, of course, never in my life, but I was not that close, you know, praying so much, etc. So it was shocking to me that suddenly he was here in my room, in a way, of course, that I could recognize him, that it was him. And then he said, can I take your hand and follow me and just watch. And then I gave my hand to him, and he took me, and suddenly it was like transparent. We were moving like ghosts, you know, transparent in the room, and suddenly we were somewhere in a big desert and area, and there was tons of people with a lot of pain and suffering. There was a lot of screamings and people being very sick. So he told me, go to that hill with those people there and just watch. And this is when I saw, finally made sense, because I was born as a Catholic. And as a Catholic, I was always told to kneel to pray by respect to the Virgin Mary or to Jesus. And I could never understand why I needed to kneel for respect. I said, well, I don't have to kneel. And of course, every time the priest would be very angry at me because I was daring to ask something that he didn't even know how to respond anyway. So that when I saw Jesus do his healing with all those people, I was able to understand what was happening, why. People, when Jesus had such an aura, a huge, huge, huge aura. And I remember when I would perform my music, the people with ability to see would tell me, you know, when you start playing, your aura start getting so big, so big, so big, it takes the entire stage and beyond. And I say, okay, well, when I play, I'm playing, so I'm not, I don't know, I don't see that. So I could see that with Jesus. That's very amazing. And people, when they enter his aura, step by step, entering his aura, getting closer and closer to him, they would like, it was so overwhelming, they couldn't handle it anymore. And it would make them weak. It would make them surrender. That's how I felt. It makes them surrender and make them very physically weak, so weak that they cannot stand anymore. And then they kneel and they finish to come to Jesus by kneeling, because that's the only way they can reach out to him. They cannot stand anymore. And basically, as soon as they were close to him, they were already healed. And when he was putting his hands on their foreheads or wherever he was guided to do so, it was kind of like the seal mark, his seal mark of the healing that took place prior to him touching them. And when it was my turn to come there, then he told me, he said, now you understand what the music does when you create that. When you serve to let the music flow through you, the divine music basically flow through you, it creates that aura. And when people bathe in that aura, enter that aura, where things can happen if people choose to. And when I was doing those meditation in Palm Springs, I would always have people behind me. I would always ask in the room before. And I didn't know why at the time, because I was before the accident, so before I had this experience with Jesus, teaching of healing. And I had people behind me when I was playing for them. And so they were bathing in that aura. They were right there. And so it got me and said, oh, so that's why they were receiving healings and even better than healings for some of them.
Wow, that's just absolutely fascinating. And your music heals so many in their lives. Where do you get the inspiration from it? How do you go about composing your music?
Well, it's usually the angels. When I'm told to create an album, my big work is to wait for the day it's going to happen. It's not like, you know, I'm a composer and I do one song the 3rd of March, and then maybe I'm going to Thailand and in May, and then I'm going to create another song in June. And no, it doesn't work like that with any of my albums. It's just, I don't know. I just leave my day, and suddenly I know, oh, it's tomorrow. Or they tell me in advance what I have to do to prepare myself to an album, to create an album. And usually the album is created the musical rapture was created in, it lasts an hour. So it was created in an hour. And Reflections album was created in one day. And it goes to the longest, I think, was the, I forgot if it was the Dolphins CD or the Symphony of Light. It was like 5 days. But that was the longest it took to create the album. And usually when I create an album, I'm completely, I don't accept phone calls. I don't live outside that world. I am completely entranced with that moment. And when the last song is done, I know it's done. That's it. It's done. And it's funny every time. It's always very amusing to me how it happens. So it's hard to respond to your question. Like what gives me inspiration? It's
divine.
It's divinely sent. Yeah, it's divinely sent. That's it. So it's, of course it adds up to what I see, what I feel about things, about you know, since I'm able to see everything from a higher perspective, then it's easy to not be caught into the drama and trauma of most events in this life. So I see always things from a lighter perspective, which I can translate into music. Yeah.
Well, and I find it interesting, Frederick, that you're given notice too.
Oh yeah, always. Every time I do an album, I'm always given notice prior to when it's going to happen. So I have time to, like when I do, you know, personalized music, people always ask, when can I have my CD? And I say, well, I don't know, because you're not on like on a waiting list and today's your turn. No, I don't know. You're on that list. And I don't know when I'm going to get the green light to do your music. I don't know. Maybe it's going to be tomorrow. Maybe it's going to be in 3 weeks. It's whenever I'm told to do it, I'm doing it because that was the right time. And I don't rush into anything. And that's a big work for a human being to have to be that patient, to wait for the right moment to do things, because we always tend to put things into schedule and being very organized. But it does, certainly with my life, I have learned not to live that way. I can't live that way.
So you're very patient overall, is that what you're saying?
Well, you have to. Yeah, of course you have to be patient overall, because I don't know how else I could be. I don't know how I could function otherwise. It would be
right.
Very difficult otherwise.
Well, you learn patience, but you also had to learn spontaneity also.
Right, that's correct.
So when did you learn or realize that you could actually communicate with your angels?
After the paralysis
okay.
episode, when thanks to my angel communicator, she taught me how to do that. And, you know, she gave me several exercises, and I was able to see things right away and to communicate right away, and I was stunned that, you know, the message I would receive was the right answer. And, you know, so I was like always, so she taught me how to do that. And then she told that that's the same person who told me, now you don't need me, you know more than me. Just go out there and learn more about who you are and practice. That's your best score. Practice yourself, because my recipes are able to guide you as baby steps, but then you need to live your own life. You need to have your own personal recipes too, because everybody can see things differently, can receive messages differently. Some people can see images, some people can see films in color or in black and white, and some people see symbols that they translate into what it means. So people can see or feel from a different type of there is different ways to see or feel. That's what I'm trying to say. So basically she said, go learn how, you know, what's your way. And that's, you know, so.
I love what you said, practice being yourself. Because that's really what we are doing, isn't it?
We're trying, yeah. We're
now,
trying.
Do you believe that other people can communicate with the angels?
Of course. We all can. We all can, because the angels are always here to assist us in our tough mission to have already accepted to be living on Earth, which is quite a low vibration in itself. So angels have been very always here to assist us. So everybody can talk to them if they're open to it. But most of the time when I would teach people how to do that or guide people how to do that, and people would say, I keep talking to them, I ask them, but they don't respond. And I say, well, of course they do. But it goes back to, oh, what are you looking at? If you ask a question and you're looking just in front of you and already know the answer, kind of what you want, but you're not completely 360 degrees open-minded, and you're not looking all around you to where the answer could come from, then you're not going to see that answer, because maybe the answer comes from the side, from behind you, or from the sky, or from and you won't see it, because you're only focusing on one side of the story. and if you focalize on the wrong point, then of course you will not get your answer. I mean, the answer was sent to you, but you will not know what it was, because you were not open to that answer.
So we need to take our blinders off and listen a little bit more.
Well, we need to be open-minded and see things from we always need to step back. When we're caught up in something, any type of situation that gives us stress, it's very important to step back or just try to sit quiet and allow us to see this event from a higher perspective, from a different angle. And it's usually, you know, I always like to teach people that, you know, if you're in a room and you're caught up into any type of trauma or drama, anything that gives you stress and distracts you from discernment and clarity, then the best is to sit quiet and imagine that in each corner of the ceiling there is video cameras directed towards you sitting on your chair, and imagine looking behind those cameras and looking at yourself from above behind those cameras and looking at yourself in that situation, or putting in that center of the room the situation that gives you stress, and bringing the, even if it involves people or a company or whatever it involves, whatever it is, put that there and go behind the camera, you know, transport yourself behind, close your eyes and transport yourself behind the camera as if you were looking behind those cameras on each corner of the ceiling. And once you've done all the cameras one at a time, you will see the situation from a very different angle. And the situation after that exercise, you may just even laugh about it all, and you may just say, oh my God, I was so silly to have stress for that, because there is nothing to worry, or whatever it could be. But you will see that that situation from that event from a much higher perspective that usually doesn't need that much stress. The stress is because the unknown, and we don't know how to figure it out, so we get even more stressed. But if you step back and see the situation from higher perspective, then you will have a more global vision of that event, or why that event had to occur in order to open your hearts, open your eyes, or open the eyes of your heart to see something that you needed to understand.
What a great exercise, Frederick. Well, I know that you've helped me tremendously with that, and just being able to get a 360-degree view and take yourself out of the situation. I can see how completely powerful that is, and I plan on doing that this evening before I go to bed. So thank you. I appreciate
You're
that.
Right.
And what I'm going to do, Frederick, is I'm going to open it up for a Q&A, for our question and answer. I mean, I have another question I want to ask you, but I'm going to go ahead and turn the Q&A on. What that means to everybody listening is, if you have a question that you would like to ask Frederick, now is the time to go ahead and hit *6, and then I will call on you in just a moment, and you'll have that opportunity to ask Frederick. And what I'd like to do while they're thinking about their questions and seeing if they would like to do that is, and Frederick, you kind of answered this in the last question, but do you have any other suggestions on how people can take their power back? Because we talked a little bit about that at the beginning of the call, is that we give our power away so often. And Frederick, hold on. I think it muted you. I'm unmuting you. Okay, you're back. Sorry about that. I didn't realize.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Yeah. I said that we give our power away almost every day, because the society is made up, is constructed in a way that we always give our power away without even realizing it. Also, we give our power away with any type of trauma. Every time we encounter a trauma, a drama, any type of situation that causes any type of stress, or every time we argue with somebody, or we have a disagreement with a situation or with somebody, we give our power back to that person or to that situation. Like if we have a grudge towards somebody, we give a part of us to that person. And if we have a disagreement towards whatever in this planet, we give our power away to that situation or to that event or whatever that is. So in order to get our power back, we have to live our own life. That's the only way. We have to understand first how easily we give our power away. Once we understand how easily and we give it away, well, it's easy then to get it back by a prayer, a simple prayer, like what I did when I felt I was paralyzed, and right away I did my prayer, saying, "I'm sorry, Frederick, for not, you know, for being a bad boy, and for being afraid, for living through fears of the unknown." And the unknown was all that power in the music that I didn't know how to handle, and all the gift messages I would receive, and I didn't know if it was from the angels, or I didn't know if I was really a bad boy, if I was seeing things that I was not supposed to see. So I really, through that, because of that fear, I gave my power away a lot, but I got it back when I got paralyzed it was released from my solar plexus, and that's really one thing. I really think that's what created the healing to take place. So I was able to walk again normally after 8 months.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that. And I'm going to go ahead and open this up to our first question that we have. We have area code 323. Go ahead and ask your question.
Is that me?
That is you.
Hi. Hello, Frederick. My name is Jan. We've spoken before in the past. I have a quick question. In October, a dog that I have loved with all my heart, he was 16 years, 5 months, and 1 day old, died here at home in my arms. And I was very torn about euthanasia, and I was in a position where the vet agreed to come to the house, and she was a beautiful, beautiful woman. And she came to the house, but in the end, we didn't have to use the euthanasia. I just needed to be willing to help him. And in the seconds before he died, he looked at me, and it was like a veil lifted from his eyes. And I've seen love in my life. I recognize and I know love.
Mm-hmm.
But I've never seen anything so extraordinary like what I saw in his eyes. He wasn't a dog, and he wasn't human. He was something much, much more than that. And it was love like I have never, ever seen. And it was like he was saying, "Thank you. I love you. Everything is okay. We did it." And he opened his mouth and left.
Wow.
And it was just so phenomenal. And I was like, "Oh, my God, who are you?" And in that moment, I got that dogs, we don't know who they are. They're so extraordinary. And they understand every word, every thought that we think or say, that's what I got, and I just wanted to hear your take on my experience, please.
Well, thank you for sharing your powerful experience with another being. You know, like you say, dogs, but it's every animal, any animal, every animal is a living being, and you know, we're all living beings. And when I say, you know, I can go way beyond this, you know, trees and plants, we're all breathing beings, you know. We function all differently, and we, you know, but we're all beings. So in talking about the dog, of course the dog has, you know, he almost functions like us. He has eyes to see, he has, you know, everything. So of course he was at the transition when he was, it was like a few seconds when it's like almost when you're in the coma or in the near-death experience, you are between the light and between you're in and between worlds. So the light, the divine light, and you. And he was able to, through his eyes, because it's always happened with the eyes. That's why I always talk about the eyes or the eyes of your heart, because that's always what is the most important, where love comes from. And he was able to plant the seed in you of that experience, so you can talk about it and can bring awareness to other people that may be a little bit less open-minded than you are, and that they, you know, it's all about planting seeds to make a better world tomorrow. I mean, today, and also for the future, for the near future. But it all starts with a seed we plant. So your dog did just that with you when he left. He walked you for a few seconds. He just looked at you with such eyes from where he was already leaning towards, which is the light, and he gave you that gift.
Wow.
The visual of that gift of the world he was going towards. So it's extremely powerful. So he gifted you with something you don't even have any idea what it is, because right now you're still limited to the visual of his eyes.
Yeah.
But if you look from a higher perspective, he probably gifted you with way more that you haven't explored yet. So I invite you to go ahead and explore what he gifted you with.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jan.
I totally get that. Thank you.
Thank you
for sharing, Jan. Okay, we're going to... All right, then. If we have anybody else who would like to ask a question, feel free to. And Frederick, what I'd like to do is find out from you, what is next for you? What do you want to still do?
Well, I received vision, a very distinctive vision in my childhood. And like I knew at the age of 7 that I would be living in California, or I had to go to California sometime in my life, and I would be living in California. It was already, I knew it. I don't ask me how I knew it. It's just, I knew it. And so now I am here and in the West Coast of the United States for now. You know, I'm always open-minded, I'm always have an open heart to what they want me to do. And I know the next step is the big step. It's really why I came here to do. And I don't know if I'm allowed to talk about it yet. I don't feel like I can talk about it totally openly yet. But All I can say is the next step is to wait for a time when I will be called, guided, I mean, asked to perform for many, more for the mass, for more for the masses. And I see scenes of outdoor concerts where the, you know, many people, and I am on a stage kind of high somewhere in the city, and I see a lot of agitation going on in different part of the crowd, and all I know is that it's at those agitation is people receiving the gift. You know, people surrendering. It's all about surrender. It's not the music that does healing. It's not, certainly not me either. But what it creates, like Jesus told me, it creates an aura. And when you dare to surrender totally surrender. And when I say totally surrender, it's kind of scary because you could have your last breath and you don't even know it. That's almost how it is. It's totally surrender that you give yourself totally to yourself. Talking about getting your power back, that's a powerful way, but it's very difficult to do because we always hold on something because we're kind of scared a little bit, even if we think we're not. So when you surrender, when you bathe into that music, at that moment, even if it lasts 1 second, the angels always tell me, if somebody can surrender for even 1 second or less, they can receive the gift. And the gift can be whatever is necessary for that person. It can be a physical healing, something in the body that was damaged that will be suddenly normal. Or a gift of music, or a gift of creation, or a gift of a business, and a new business venture, or whatever it could be, you know, or a new relationship, or beginning of something new for a new life, for you know. So.
Thank you for sharing that. And we are running out of time, but I do have another caller, and we will get that question. And all I can say is we'll be watching your website to find out when this next big thing has arrived for you. We have the caller with the area code 352-205. That's the beginning of your phone. You are unmuted and can ask your question.
Thank you, Tracy. And this is Lynn Walker. And Frederick, I just wanted to reach out and just tell you how much your music has meant to me. I've been listening to your music for about a year now, and it has literally allowed me to see life through the eyes of my heart. And I do share that with people that I come in contact with. And I just wanted to let you know how much it's meant to me.
Well, thank you so much.
And thank you, Lynn, very much. And Frederick, I have to say that Lynn is the first one who shared with me your music. So I am very blessed that she did so. And I'd like you to be able to give the listeners how they can get a hold of you, your website, and if they do have any questions, maybe you'd be willing to share an email address.
Definitely. Please do not hesitate to contact me. I always respond to all emails, not always as soon as I'd like, depending on how busy I am, but I always respond personally to all the emails sent to me. So if in case I don't respond, please do not hesitate to send it again, because sometimes, you know, things happen with the email world where we think we responded and we didn't, or sometimes emails go to your spam folder and you delete it without knowing that I responded. So don't hesitate to send it a second time if you didn't get any response. So I'm always available and welcome to receive any emails.
And what is your email address, Frederick?
So it would be Frederick, if you know how to spell it first. So it's like FREDERIC, Frederick, Frederick, at frederickdelarue.com. So it's FREDERIC at FREDERIC, DELARUE.com.
And then your website is also frederickdelarue.com, correct?
.com, yeah, that's correct.
Well, Frederick, I really have to say that you truly are a blessing to all of us. And if you do not have any of Frederick's music, I really hope that you go to his website and pick some up, because it really will, as Lynn said, change your heart. And thank you very much. And if you'd like to find out more about World Wellness Education, go to our website at worldwellnesseducation.org. Thanks again, Frederick, and have a good night, everyone.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye. Have a good night.
Bye.